November 13, 1974, South Shore, Long Island, New York. Six members of the DeFeo family are shot dead around 3 a.m. on Ocean Avenue. Mother, father, two sons, and two daughters. Surviving, the oldest child, 23-year-old Ronald DeFeo Jr. These tragic murders have long since been overshadowed by a family that moved into 112 Ocean Avenue after the DeFeos were brutally killed. The Lutz family, of whom none died. There are books, documentaries, more than one Hollywood movie, and tons of believers as well as skeptics about this home. On part two in this week's episode, we're joined again by psychic medium Katherine Kaufman.
Hey, y'all.
Who's here to help us all understand the tragedy, the fame, and the paranormal activity that followed. This is the real Amityville Horror, part two. Hey, y'all. I'm Chris Calvert.
And I'm Katherine Kaufman, psychic medium.
I am her husband, David Lee Hicks.
And I'm her husband, Rob Potter. And this is Scotty, the dog. Welcome to Hitch to Homicide.
For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Welcome back, everybody.
Yes, welcome, welcome, and welcome.
I gave you lots of time for that.
Yeah, I got them all in.
This week, it's part two, and again, in the studio, we are joined by psychic medium Katherine Kaufman.
Woohoo!
Yep.
Everybody, woohoo!
There you go. Hey, listen, if you've got a psychic medium saying woohoo, you know you're going to have a good day. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
I have to say, just a little personal side note, whenever I get a text from Katherine and she says, you doing okay? I'm just checking in on you. I'm like, holy shit.
What's going to happen?
What am I supposed to be looking out for today?
Yep.
There's something.
Nothing good can come of
That's
this.
That's right. So there are pros and cons of having a yes. good friend yes. who's a psychic medium. But we're so glad that you're back again to help us work on this case, talk about it, unpack all the facts. I want everybody to go to katherinekaufman.com, two F's, one M, to find her website. We will have a link to it in the show notes, as well as all the fun things and interesting things that you can do with Katherine. And the best part about it is, I just want to say this quickly, you don't have to be in Kentucky. Katherine
right.
is here in Kentucky with me, but you do all kinds of work with people via
all
Zoom.
All over the world.
All over the world, just like people
Zoom,
are listening
Skype,
all over the world here.
Phone,
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that she has done readings for me. She's scary accurate. It's a little bit scary, but she is... She's an
Even my husband is scared.
David's providing all the sound effects.
Yeah,
I love
David's decks. Taking over all the sound design and music. For
there
this
you
episode.
Go. Rob gets the day off. That's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, before we get started on this case, I do want to say we've had people who have emailed in asking about some cases that we have covered already, but as Kentucky Fried Homicide, someone actually emailed me a case about Richard Cottingham. He was the New York City Ripper.
Mm.
And we did do a case about that. It might have been like case number two or three, maybe, Rob. Do you remember? It was really early on.
Yeah, that was... Yeah,
but I'm happy to recover some of these cases. So if you want to send me a quick email at chris@hitchtohomicide.com, I'll look into it. And if there's enough people who want to hear a case over again, I'm happy to do that for you.
Yeah, because listen, we had a lot of great cases in Kentucky Fried Homicide. So I'm sure that we'll revisit every once in a while.
Well, some of those are awaiting trial. Yeah. Some of them are awaiting people who are up for parole, who certainly shouldn't be up for parole. But right. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So, but we will cover some of those. But send us an email if you would like to hear any of that. And join our Facebook group, the In-Laws and Outlaws.
Yep.
We're having a lot of fun in there. Catherine is a member. She's Yay. Are you an in-law or an outlaw,
Catherine?
I am
an outlaw.
There you go.
David is also an in-law and an outlaw. He's in that group as well because I was able to tag him for that. But go join that group. We have a lot of fun in there, and I post a lot of extra information about the cases that we're doing. I'm going to go ahead and get started. Before I do, I want to thank some sources. True TV, AmityvilleMurders.com, HorrorObsessive.com, Oxygen.com, Newsday, the New York Daily News, True Crime Recaps, People Magazine, Daily Mail, Newsday, Good Housekeeping, if you can imagine that.
Wow.
And the documentary My Amityville Horror and Speakers of the Supernatural by Taffy Sealyham and a book, The Night the DeFeos Died by Rick Osuna.
Hmm.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it. Here we go. So just to recap on last week's episode, the oldest of the DeFeos, Ronald Jr., or Butch, has confessed to killing his family on November 13th, 1974, has denied murdering his family, has said that he's insane, and he's also said that it was actually his sister and two others who murdered his family, two little brothers and a little sister. Butch then murdered the oldest sister because he was angry with her for what she had done. 1 year later, on December 18th, 1975, the Lutz family moved into the DeFeo home. George, wife Kathleen, son Daniel, son Christopher, and daughter Missy.
And that's significant because I think that when you have a similar, like the children might have been similar ages, and the people that bought it might have been similar ages to the DeFeos. I think that those are triggers.
Ah, interesting.
That can link to the energies of the DeFeos' traumatic imprint that was left in the environment.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
That does make a lot of sense. Which brings me to a point. I'm just going to ask this.
Okay.
Because people buy new houses all the time, Catherine.
Oh, yeah. And I have a video on I have three videos on don't buy a haunted house on my YouTube channel of it, specifically what to look for, what to avoid, and how not to fall into what happened to the Lutzes.
Wow.
Well, we will have a link to your YouTube channel so everybody can go seek those out. But, I mean, that has to be something I think about that, even when I was, every time I've moved, mm-hmm. anytime I have looked at a home that someone else has lived in,
right,
I would get a good feeling or a bad feeling. I looked at a house one time, the family was going through a very ugly divorce. I didn't know that, but right. I walked into the house.
You
and
could feel it.
I turned around and I said, something bad's going on here and mm-hmm. I can't mix my energy up in this.
And right, so, and I work with a lot of people who are looking for homes. Often they will employ me to either go and view the property or guide them through what they should do, what they should look for, how they should evaluate it. So there are things that you can do to prevent ending up with a disaster.
I mean, that's interesting because you don't want to, I mean, you could love the house and it's great. It's 200 mm-hmm. years old. It's historic. But who wants to have to sage their kitchen all the time? Yeah. I mean, not me.
Evidently, the Lutz didn't.
The Lutzes did not sage anything.
Didn't have any luck.
They did not sage anything at all. They didn't say anything at all. And it had only been 13 months since the DeFeo murders. And the family is later going to claim at a press conference that, quote, the DeFeo slayings weren't something that would bother us, end quote.
Oh, wow. Mm.
So what kind of family is like, yeah, we're fine to move into this house where six people were murdered?
Yeah, I wouldn't be. okay with
yeah.
it.
I wouldn't be either. And you have to disclose that. I believe
you're supposed to.
That a real estate agent has to disclose if there was a murder, not if somebody died in the house.
Right.
But if there was a murder in the home.
But you know, they don't have to disclose anything if you're going to lease a townhome or apartment.
Really?
Yes. You don't get to know anything.
And now everybody sitting in their apartment listening to this podcast at 2 in the morning is going, what the hell happened in my place that I don't know about?
That was one of the most haunted incidents that I've ever been involved with, was involving a townhome that was extremely haunted. Poor David didn't go with me that night.
Actually, I missed out.
And when I came home and told him what happened, he was like, God, I should have gone.
Yeah.
But it was unbelievable. And it was a townhome. And actually, my assistant that I brought with me on that evening was a leasing agent. I mean, you know, we all do other stuff in our regular life to pay the bills. And she was a leasing agent. And she told me, she said, you know, in townhomes, they don't have to disclose anything.
Wow.
And
that's good to know.
Wow, that's crazy. But
you know, they need to come up with a Carfax for realtors.
Yes, I agree.
Show me the apartment facts.
Yeah, the apartment facts.
Yeah, I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Lutz family, of course, this is the family in Jay Anson's book, The Amityville Horror, that is supposed to be based on a true story. I will put a link to this book in the show notes. But according to Anson's book, Father Mancuso, which is a pseudonym for a priest actually named Father Pecoraro, arrives to bless the family's new house on the same day they move in. And while the Lutzes unload their moving van, the Catholic priest enters the house and he begins his ritual blessing. He's all by himself. I'm going to stop for a second. Is this something that you recommend, to have a house blessed before somebody moves into it?
Yes, but as we have found in the last few years, just a simple smudging or blessing is not working as efficaciously as it has in the past. So that, in accordance with other advanced protective measures, have to be done.
So to me, I'm going to translate. That sounds like the world's going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, ding, ding.
And you need more than just a blessing for your house. I was actually thinking, if you're not a believer, it doesn't work.
Oh, absolutely.
So I know people who've had new construction, and I honestly would do this. On new construction, before anything goes up, they actually write Bible verses onto the concrete, onto the 2x4. Yeah.
That's an ancient technique.
Yeah.
Because when they tear buildings down or they're reconstructing buildings, they will often find old verse behind the wall boards.
Oh, wow.
And so that's taken from ancient techniques.
Yeah. And maybe... I would definitely do it. Nobody did this at 112 Ocean Avenue. I'm just going to say this right off the bat.
Yeah.
So according to the book, let me just reiterate, Father Mancuso, who's actually Father Pecoraro, he blesses the family's house on the day they move in. And while the Lutzes unload the moving van, the Catholic priest enters the house. He begins his ritual blessing. He's all by himself. He makes his way up the stairs to the second floor. He enters the northeast bedroom, which had been Mark and John Matthews' room. He sprinkles holy water around the room, recites a prayer, and he hears a loud male voice allegedly say, "Get out."
That's pretty common in a lot of hauntings. And people are very quick to say that's demonic, but what people don't realize is that a lot of human spirits know exactly what to say to elicit fear, to extract the people that are trying to move in.
It would work on me.
And often we will have EVPs that will say, "Devil," or,
"Really?"
Or have a gravelly type of voice that's somewhat demonic. But if you think about it, that spirit knows what to do or what to say.
To get people out.
Exactly.
But because it's their space.
Yeah, that doesn't fit into a demonic haunting.
Hey, they did that in Beetlejuice. So.
Good reference, honey. There you go. Good reference.
Yeah.
So the priest supposedly does not tell the family about the voice. He did warn them about the room and said, quote, don't use it as a bedroom. Don't let anyone sleep in there.
That was good advice.
Yeah. And according to a Good Housekeeping article dated April 1977, the Lutzes followed the priest's advice and turned the room into a sewing room.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
But, you know, I'm a seamstress. I love to sew. I'd be in there. Somebody be tapping me on the shoulder. I wouldn't like that. I'd be, yeah, that would bother me. Yeah. One haunted room is one haunted room too many.
Yeah.
Now, from the very first night they move in, the Lutz family claimed that they felt strange sensations. Anson had written that the family's personality had drastically changed. On one occasion in the book, the young couple beat their children with a strap and a large wooden spoon after moving to the house because the children had apparently become brats. That was the word.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, the imprint of the previous owners is in the environment. And so what they were under is called oppression, not necessarily possession, but oppression, to where they're picking up on empathically
the energy
of the previous owner and the tendency to be short and have abuse was carried over from DeFeo Sr.
Right. But then things get worse. And from the stench of bile to the smell of cheap perfume, the family gets freaked out even more by the mysterious smells that would come from different locations of the house. They had black stains that appeared on the toilets that could not be lifted even with Clorox. And if Clorox can't get it, nothing's getting it. Green slime ran down walls, although there appeared to be no reason or source from the green slime.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of flies appeared in the sewing room despite it being the dead of winter. And of course, Anson's crowning moment was an upside-down crucifix. And this was just the tip of the iceberg of the so-called Amityville haunting. What does an upside-down crucifix signify?
A loose nail. I mean, unless that happens repeatedly, you cannot connect that to anything.
Okay. Good to know.
It would be a making a blasphemy of.
Right. Obviously, it's blasphemous.
Like, if you continually had that happening with pictures of, like, let's say you had a picture of Jesus on the wall or some kind of
divine
statue,
divinity, something.
There would, to really say it's something, you would have to have that happening continually, plus other things happening to religious objects in the house.
Hmm. So it's really not like a horror movie.
No.
At all.
No.
In any way, shape, or form.
No. But people's imaginations and their thoughts feed into it, which is one of the things that I channeled from, you know, the first session that we did with this.
Talking about the DeFeos.
When people focus on something so much, they create what we call a thought form. And a thought form actually is somewhat of a rudimentary type of energy being. And that can cause things to happen. And so when they gave this thought form a thought that it's demonic, then that people fed into that.
It's almost like willing it, manifesting
exactly.
it into existence.
Yes, right. Because...
And people are really into manifesting things right now.
Right.
So.
If you go into a room and you sense that somebody in that room is in despair, like no one has to tell you who the person is that's in despair because the emotions go out from the body. And the emotions go out from the body, that's creating a thought form and that's what people sense.
Interesting.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
So I think that they, in this, they created a demonic mm-hmm. type of entity through everybody fixating on a thought form.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Well, according to the author Anson, the phenomenon then turned physical. Kathy was victimized by unseen touches, which had sometimes forced her to pass out. I've never heard of that before. I mean, I've heard of people being touched and stuff, but...
Yeah, I haven't heard of that either.
On the other hand, George would sit for hours by the fireplace because he suffered from constant chills. And I wanted to be like, yeah, me too, but that's a thyroid issue. I'm cold all the time.
Get a bigger blanket.
Get a bigger blanket. You're going to need a bigger blanket.
The increase in electromagnetic energy in the environment from the people who've passed on will create a cold effect.
So those are like cold spots that you hear of, correct?
Right. And that's from additional electromagnetic energy in the environment. Hmm. If you've ever been shocked, which I have, it feels cold. And so I feel like that's them sensing the extra electromagnetic energy in the environment.
Wow. Okay. Hmm. Wow. Okay. That's cool. In addition, he would wake up nightly at 3:15 a.m., reasoning that there was a connection between that hour and the hour that the DeFeos were killed. I wake up at 3 o'clock all the time. Tons of people that I know wake up at 3 o'clock all the time. I wake up at 3:33
all the time. I wake up at 4, so.
Yeah, and I've heard things as, you know, as much as like, you know, that was the dark hour when Jesus died, that it was mm-hmm. at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And so that's why people wake up at 3 a.m. Maybe you just have to get up and go to the bathroom at 3 a.m.
Yeah, physiologically, we're designed to wake up at that. And then two, if you look into the medical part of it, the hormones shift in the body at 3 a.m. A lot of people going through menopause will have hot flashes at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that will cause them to wake up. So there's a lot of physiological changes that can happen at 3 a.m. to make you wake up.
Hmm. Also, I just want to interject at this point that Catherine is a retired. Can I say you're retired?
Yeah, it's gone. I'll tell you that.
She's a retired ICU nurse. She's seen the worst of the worst. She's been there through a lot of stuff. So when she talks about her medical side of it, it really does come from a place of, you know, of her past life.
She knows her stuff.
She knows her stuff. I love asking her questions about this all the time. But even though he's waking up at 3:15 in the morning, in reality, the DeFeos were probably killed closer to 4 a.m., according to the medical examiner. But that is part of his story. And as the month went on, it got worse. Anson reported that George awoke one night to witness his wife transform into a 90-year-old hag.
Hmm.
That got every man's horror.
That got an from David.
Every man's horror.
Yeah, can you imagine just rolling over in the middle of the night thinking you're going to see your sweet wife and you get a 90-year-old person? Yeah.
That would be a little disturbing.
Yeah, Rob would be like, honey, more wrinkle cream.
No, I'd have to have my glasses on.
Yeah, he'd have to put his glasses on and then he'd be like, more Botox, more wrinkle cream. Come on, honey, get with the program. The next night he woke up, after the first night he wakes up and she's a 90-year-old hag, the next night he wakes up and she is levitating off the bed.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
Forcing her husband to grab her before she floated away.
Wow.
Whew. Do you have any comments about that, Catherine?
Well, again, you know, people are more apt to be influenced in their sleep because of the altered brainwave state.
So you could feel like you're floating, maybe if you're not.
But if he saw her floating,
levitating, yeah.
Then that's, I don't know that I believe that because, and I know it sounds strange, me being a psychic medium, but I have to really logically rule all this out, you know.
Well, there are a lot of people who rule a lot of the things that are in this book out.
So all I know is that when people are asleep and they're in certain brain waves, they're more apt to experience things that are paranormal.
Sure.
Is that the fade away? Yeah. The conscious mind's not in control. And so a person can astral travel, they can astral project, and maybe even this levitate could happen, but I would have to see it to believe it.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, there are a lot of people who don't believe that part of it. And many of the things that that the author Anson puts into this book.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, after his wife is 90 one night and she's floating the next night, he realizes they need some help. And the family contacts the same Catholic priest and asks him to come back to the house and perform another blessing. And according to Jay Anson's book, the priest had been feeling the after effects from the first blessing, and whatever was plaguing the family was also bothering the priest, meaning it had followed him.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wherever he had gone. And when the priest won't come back, the family takes matters into their own hands, and armed with a crucifix, they walked through the house together, reciting the Lord's Prayer.
You know what the problem is here, I think? And this is a problem in a lot of these type of situations, is you have multiple people who've been brutally murdered. They're confused. They're disoriented, and they don't know what to do. And so they're trying to impress on the people that are there, that are still living, that they need help. And, a blessing does not give them direction. So the direction that they need is for the priest to say, you've been brutally murdered.
Yeah.
You are not dreaming.
Here.
You're not dreaming. You're dead. This is what you need to envision. This is where you need to go. This is what you need to do. They need a direction, which they don't get.
And in fact, they hear voices that ask, will you please stop? When they're reciting the Lord's Prayer. The most incredible part of Anson's story was his claim that the daughter, the little girl, Missy, had befriended an invisible red-eyed pig named Jody. And according to George Lutz, quote, Jody could not be seen by anyone unless it wanted to. At times, it was a little bit bigger than a teddy bear, and at other times, it was bigger than the house, end
wow.
quote.
Wow.
Yeah, kids often will have paranormal experiences that their parents don't, because children from the age of 2 to 12, 80% of their brainwave state is in alpha or theta.
Theta, right. Mm. I even read that.
And
yeah.
So that's why they are able to communicate with entities that we can't.
Or remember past lives, which is something that I want to do a podcast with you on that.
Sure.
The book also reported that the malevolent forces caused significant property damage to the house, such as the front door being ripped off its hinges, windows being smashed, banisters being torn from their fittings, damage to the garage door, and water damage from hurricane-force winds, which local weather stations had no record of. So they're basically saying it was a shit show inside this house.
Hmm.
I don't know. I think that this is Northeast, right?
This is Long Island, New York.
Yeah. There's lots of places that get battered by the weather.
Yeah, I agree. And there are a lot of people who lived on their street who said, this is a bunch of hooey. We lived on this street too.
Yeah.
None of this really happened.
Yeah, you can't label that paranormal. I feel like that the Lutzes had got in over their head financially. And that a lot of the stuff that went on was probably due to the fact that they couldn't keep up with the costs of that property.
Well, and in fact, you make a really good point, because this house had a heated pool in the backyard.
Wow.
They had a boat dock there on Long Island. This is a beautiful area of Amityville. And
mm-hmm.
the house, no one would buy this house, and they got it for rock bottom pricing.
Right.
So even then, they couldn't keep up with it. They talked about the fact that their dog, Harry, was normally hyper and Harry had become increasingly lethargic while he was at the house, and one time the dog had actually almost choked himself because he was trying to scale the fence to get the heck fire out of there.
Yeah. Well, you know, dogs, cats, honeybees, and horses can all see wavelengths of light that we can't. And the human spirit is consistent of ultraviolet light, infrared light, and bioluminescence, all of which a dog can see. And so even though our rudimentary eyes can't visualize that, animals certainly can.
Yeah. And
that would make sense to me.
So is that why, you know, every once in a while a dog will just
stare.
Bark. Yeah,
yes.
Stare or bark at something.
Yes.
Or,
yes.
And it happens a lot in our house. Yeah. Hey, I'm sorry to say it, but it does happen.
Yes, that's exactly what.
One of the more chilling events in Anson's book was when George is awakened to the sound of a marching band in his living room. He claims that he raced downstairs, entered the room, only to find dead silence and that the furniture had all been pushed aside.
That sounds like a poltergeist.
Yeah. After 28 days in the DeFeo home, the Lutz family claimed they could take no more. They grabbed only a few belongings and fled the house, taking shelter at Kathy Lutz's mother's home in nearby Babylon, Long Island. Now, Jay Anson's Amityville Horror sold more than 3 million copies and was turned into a major motion picture that grossed more than $80 million. The family happily went on a nationwide tour to promote the book as their, quote, true story. Now, lots of questions were out there as to how true the story really was. And so psychic mediums came into the home. And for goodness sake, you know there's some bad juju in that house.
Oh, yeah. There's a huge traumatic imprint in that environment.
Yeah. And Ed and Lorraine Warren are called in by a friend who's a newscaster from Channel 5. And when Ed and Lorraine Warren go into this house on Ocean Avenue, they didn't know that people had been murdered there. And I read that and I thought, Catherine never wants to know anything.
Yeah.
Right.
So when you talk to her about whatever it is that you're seeking, you can give her very few details. So for this case, I gave her the name of Ronald DeFeo Jr. and Ronald DeFeo Sr., and I gave her a photograph. And as we're doing this podcast right now, there is a major thunderstorm raging outside. I just heard the thunder. And I'm like, I hope the lights don't go out. So, but yes, but that's all I gave her. And it was interesting to me that when they got there, they did not know that people had been murdered in that home. They just thought it was another haunted house that they were going to. And on a scale of 1 to 10, Lorraine Warren said that the Amityville house was
a 10.
A 10. She did.
How could you not?
How could
with
you
that
not?
Amount of loss of life in one dwelling.
Yeah. Right, in one night, too.
Yeah.
But what Lorraine has made perfectly clear is this, quote, I want to make it clear I do not back up the movie or the book, end quote. So she's saying, I'm going to give you my psychic reading, but whatever is in his book, whatever is in these movies, that has nothing to do with me.
Right.
And that really reminded me of you because you were like, this is what I see. Everything else outside of that, whatever. But
well,
this
I think
is
I
it.
Do a better job without any kind of leading information because I don't know. I just get better results if I don't know
absolutely.
Anything.
Absolutely. And when I came to see you, I didn't give you anything. You just knew my name. And when I walked in, I was like, okay, I'm going to put my poker face on. I've read all this information about how you don't give any clues to a psychic medium so they can't pick up on anything. I was ready. And I walked in, she gave me a hug, and she said, there's some people here who have some messages for you. And I was like, wait a minute. Wait, you did all of this before I even got here. And basically, that's what Lorraine Warren is saying as well, you know?
Yeah.
This is it. I get what I get.
Mm-hmm.
A According to Ed Warren, the case had everything. It had monstrosities in the night which roamed the house, which infested it, which caused a young man to murder his whole family. And according to Ed Warren, 6 months before the DeFeos were murdered, Mr. DeFeo went to Montreal, Canada. He went to a shrine where many miracles had occurred. He went to that shrine and he brought back from there a priest and an exorcist.
Oh, wow.
Who he brought to the house to say masses in the house.
Mm. Now, that's prophetic, isn't it?
Yeah. So if it was a hoax that was created by the Lutz family, then why 6 months before did this man and his family who were murdered have an exorcist in the house?
Yeah.
Well, now I did get something in my channeling on
that. Here we go. Okay.
Here we go. Buckle up. Get your holy water out. I did see a picture a long time ago of a sort of like of a demonic type of child that they had snapped a picture of by the banister. Okay.
Oh, my gosh, because I'm going to tell her something in just a few minutes. Okay, keep going.
Well, now, you know, DeFeo Sr. was such an abusive man, and he had to have abused DeFeo Jr. since he was small.
Little. Yeah, well, we know that at two, he threw him up against a wall. Remember the uncle saying?
Oh, right. Yeah. And that was significant for me when you said that because of what I had channeled and already written down. What I envisioned in my channeling was like an inner child from DeFeo Jr. that had been so tortured that it created this thought form. And that thought form from this tortured child, it's the inner demon.
Wow.
Of DeFeo Jr.
Wow.
That resides at the property.
Wow. Okay.
And so that thought form is fed by all of the energy that people give it as an actual demonic, which it isn't.
Thoughts become things.
Yes.
I mean, you always hear that, but it's true.
Right.
Thoughts become things.
Right. You have to think about every single thing you do. For example, you have to think about getting out of bed before you actually get up.
Oh, wow.
So everything you do throughout the day begins with a thought form.
Okay. That's really, wow. Okay. I'm like clutching my pearls right now. And I don't have my pearls on, but I'm clutching them. So Marvin Scott of Channel 5 News, he was the one who called the Warrens in to check in on this house because he told them there was a tragedy in the house. He didn't go into details like I had said, but Ed and Lorraine only knew that a family had left and they had left all their possessions behind. And Ed and Lorraine also said that George Lutz, who was this ex-Marine and a karate expert, and he ran around with motorcycle gangs, he wasn't an altar boy. He was a rough guy who left after 28 days, left his home, left everything, took his wife, his children, and went to California and left everything behind. They auctioned everything in that house off.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And according to Ed and Lorraine Warren, the Lutzes had paranormal activity follow them to the mother-in-law's home in Long Island, but once they made it to California, they were kind of in the clear, I should say.
Right, because the kids were trigger.
Yeah.
I don't want to say trigger objects, but they triggered an attachment from the entities that were locked into the home.
So the night that Ed and Lorraine go there, the photographer from the New England Society for Psychic Research comes and he takes pictures. He took over 200 photographs that evening.
Wow.
And another psychic who comes to the home says, this is where I think it gets really interesting. She says that she sees an Indian and that the house is on his land. And Ed and Lorraine Warren agree with us, saying that this is where the Shinnecock Indians had their, quote, enclosure. And the word Shinnecock means people of the stony shore. And the Shinnecock tribe is the largest tribe on Long Island. They have lived on eastern Long Island for 10,000 years.
Wow. Man,
my goodness.
That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The Shinnecock people are a part of the Algonquin language, and the Shinnecock had an enclosure there where they would put, according to this one psychic, they put the sick, the mad, and the dying in this one area, which is where this house on 112 Ocean Avenue was built. And according to Ed and Lorraine, demonic spirits, evil spirits, are drawn to the sufferings of human beings, and this place already had an aura of disaster about it.
Wow.
Which is exactly what you were saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, Lorraine Warren talks about Jody the pig. You know, we talked about the pig. Mm-hmm. And she said that the youngest of the three children, Missy, was very candid about talking about her friends.
Yes.
I've got my quotes up in Amityville. What she was referring to would be Jody the pig and others. They would come in, they would sit in a rocking chair in her room and rock. They were her friends. And this sounds different than something that's going to come forward a little bit later, because there are a lot of people in the neighborhood who think that the pig, Jody the pig, is a neighborhood cat.
Hmm.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But Lorraine says there's more than one spirit in the house.
Oh, yeah.
And while they film, here we go, Catherine, you just said this, while they film and take photos and look around, more than one of the cameramen get sick, and even one had chest pains. And Lorraine, I believe, said that the evil in the house was from the bowels of the earth, and it wasn't just the murders. And Lorraine goes up the stairs, and she didn't realize that her husband wasn't behind her. And she was going up the stairs. She said it was the worst feeling. Quote, it was like going against a tremendous pressure that was on my body. I stopped on the landing and held tight to the relic that was in my hand and asked for strength and direction going forward. It seems like my prayers were answered. And at that point, I continued up these few stairs and turned immediately to my left and went into what was known then as the sewing room. I stood in the middle of the room. I looked at Marvin Scott and I said, quote, I hope this is as close to hell as I ever get.
Wow.
End
well,
quote.
Yeah. Wow. So a lot of times, and this is why I only give two mediumships a week. They're on Wednesday and Thursday, and only one a day, because a lot of times people who've passed on, the only way that they have to communicate what happened to them is through gut feeling, because that's how your subconscious communicates. And so the gut feeling can translate into whatever pain or whatever horribleness happened to them, because that's how they're trying to get across, this is what happened to me.
And so you feel it.
And I feel it. And then I can't do anything for the rest of the afternoon. So
yeah, that's incredible.
I think
she
experienced that.
Yes.
But maybe a little bit of misinterpretation in that they are trying to, because somebody who's murdered, the first thing they want to do is to tell everybody what happened.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And so people that are sensitive that come into the area, they're trying to communicate, this is what happened. Do you know what happened to me? And the person is, it's making them sick, but they're not really getting the complete message through.
Well, nothing happened for the TV cameras. They brought TV cameras in. They did have a camera on a timer that took photos on the second floor every few seconds. This is exactly what you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And what they catch is a little boy peering out of a room.
I think that's what DeFeo Jr.'s inner child thought form. That resides at the property.
How about that? That's crazy.
Yeah.
There is a picture of it. I'll post it in the In-Laws and Outlaws.
And it looks desperate.
Yes. It's like a sad little boy. I've seen the picture.
Right.
He's like afraid.
Yeah.
You can tell he's afraid. You look at the picture and you're like, this kid's scared.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was another woman, Ethel Johnson Miles. She goes to the house on January 13th, 1977. She's a trans medium, which I think means she can take on or have spirit speak through her.
A trans channel, which any medium can do that if they allow it. But I don't do that. I don't allow them to take complete control of me.
Well, let me tell you what, because this woman apparently does.
Yeah.
And at some point in the night, she develops an Adam's apple. Her voice deepens, and she begins to speak in another language and in a man's voice.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
That's taking it a little too far.
I think I'd take the 90-year-old hag.
Yeah.
Take the 90-year-old hag.
Well, I mean, it's not safe to do.
I wouldn't think that that's safe to do. No, and no. I would think, why would you take that on as a person? I mean, you know, Ethel Johnson Miles, I mean, that was 1977. I don't know that she's still alive, but good Lord. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm. I agree.
And then let's talk a little bit about the Red Room, because if you know anything about the Amityville Horror, they always talk about the Red Room, and that's something that's talked about a lot in the book. And according to Ed and Lorraine, the Red Room was a little cubby hole that's about 7 feet high by 4 feet wide, and the Red Room is a room in which Ed and Lorraine believed that Ronald DeFeo Sr. kept the items that he used for, get this, witchcraft.
Oh, wow. Well,
witchcraft and rituals. Yeah.
Wow.
Now, this is the same man that went and brought the priests.
The relics back and the priest and wanted an exorcism in his home.
That's not congruent. I don't know about that. I think that might have been embellishment.
Maybe that was Junior. Maybe they meant that it was Junior.
Yeah, and that could have been possible because a lot of people who are backed into a corner, like I said earlier, that feel like a rat in a corner and they have no alternative will often turn to dark arts as a way of retaliation or escape.
Or coping. I mean, do you think that's a coping mechanism?
Mm, right.
Well, Ed and Lorraine Warren thought that Butch was obsessed or possessed by something demonic. He hated his father. He loved his mother. He loved his sisters and his brothers. So why did he kill them? And according to Butch, he said it was, quote, a dark form next to him that just kept him going. So I don't know if that's like some sort of
shadow person.
Well, she called it a shadow ghost. Lorraine called it a shadow person. Butch DeFeo, however, believed the stories were concocted. Get this, he's in prison, and he says, all of these stories are concocted with the help of William Weber, Butch's defense attorney in 1975. And in a handwritten letter, Butch wrote, quote, Amityville was a hoax that Weber and the Lutzes started. Yes, to make money. It started as my trial was in progress. And although George Lutz proclaimed his story to be true, William Weber argued the story and Anson's book were not. And in September of 1979 in People magazine, Weber charged, quote, I know this book's a hoax. We created this horror story over many bottles of wine, end quote.
Wow.
So it's like, who do you believe?
Well, I mean,
if you just heard, Zeus is very angry outside. There is a lot of thunder going on.
The situation just as a blank slate. You have how many people that have been brutally murdered. You do have a traumatic imprint.
Yeah, 6 dead bodies in that house alone. All right.
You already have something really horrible going on in the house. Otherwise, DeFeo Sr. would not have brought the priest to the area to do the prayers.
Yes.
So you already have all of this energy.
Yeah.
You have people who've moved into the property. They say that they think that this is not going to bother them. But as they're living in it, they're starting to experience stuff. Yes, I think that they experience some of the leftover energy there. They may have embellished it some and through glasses of wine created the book. But I think that there is a base there to work off of.
I agree with you. Not that I mean, just from doing the research, I think that DeFeo Jr. is sitting in jail and he's pissed as hell because people are off making money based on what he did.
Yeah.
And it's not really his story anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's somebody else's story.
Yeah, I think that he let himself be an easy target because he wanted some kind of notoriety, even if it was negative.
Yep.
But now, it, like you said, it's blossomed into a whole different thing that has taken the spotlight off of him.
Right. And now money is involved. And so people got sued, and there are tons of lawsuits, but most of it is just settled out of court.
Mm-hmm.
There were neighbors who said that no one had ever had anything weird happen to them on Ocean Avenue. They never saw anything odd about the house. And Jody the pig with the red eyes, this is what I was talking about. Well, some claim it was Rufus Ireland's Persian cat. It was a fat cat who used to go and sit in the windowsills of all the neighbors. And one of the Lutz kids actually drew a picture of Jody the pig, and they showed it to the neighbors, and they were all like, that's fat cat.
Yeah.
That's just a picture of fat cat.
Uh-huh.
But here's the thing. The Lutzes passed lie detector tests. They moved out 28 days after they got there. They did not go back at all. And one of the kids, Daniel, has said, quote, it's all true. In a 2013 documentary called My Amityville Horror, Daniel Lutz, the child of Kathleen who survived the alleged paranormal attacks, is interviewed and says, quote, this is not something I asked for. I've been running away from it, and it finally caught up with me, end quote.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many murders at that location. It's no wonder every single person that goes to sleep in that house and is in that theta wave dream state, those people who were murdered are going to try to communicate with them.
Unless they've crossed over. Unless they've found peace and have, like, moved on.
That ain't happening.
Here we go. Okay.
Not with this kind of trauma.
Okay.
Because, again, they have no direction.
Okay.
They don't know what to do. It's a confused state that the consciousness passes in.
So here's the interesting thing. Daniel Lutz, in his documentary, in his 2013 documentary, My Amityville Horror, he discusses the abuse that he suffered at the hands of his stepfather and his stepfather's alleged dabblings in Satanism long before the media began paying attention to the family or that house. So what he was saying was, it was one father who was abusive, and the next father who moved in was also abusive.
See, those are direct triggers that attach to the energy there.
Yeah.
Because they're of similar resonance.
Well, Daniel continues to maintain that the accounts that were given by his family, the Lutz family, his mother and his stepfather, and all the books and all the interviews, he says it's true.
I believe that there's a part of it that is true, but I think that it has been embellished and exacerbated.
I've seen interviews with him. It seems very real to him.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the question, and what I wrote in my notes was, maybe the question of whether the haunting is a hoax is not so simplistic. There's really something there.
And how old was he when this all happened?
He was 12.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as a 12-year-old, I'm sure as time goes on that those memories can be exaggerated a bit.
Yes.
Well, the house at 112 Ocean Avenue has been vastly remodeled since the late 70s. It no longer resembles the structure depicted in the films. Most notably, the crescent windows at the top.
They're gone.
Oh, see ya.
They are gone. And the house also has a new address. It is no longer 112 Ocean Avenue, but 108 Ocean Avenue.
Interesting.
As for the Lutzes, the couple themselves, Kathleen died of emphysema in 2004, and George died of heart disease in 2006 after the two divorced in 1980. In 1986, Butch explained in an interview from jail that Don was the person who murdered the family, and he took the blame because he was afraid of Pete DeFeo, his uncle, the one who was the capo. Mafia army. He was afraid of his uncle.
Yeah.
But there has been a woman who has come forward and said that Butch didn't act alone. And in fact, she was his wife, that he fathered a child with her before the murders ever happened. There's no marriage record from the 70s. She did marry him while he was in prison. And as for the remaining member of the DeFeo family, on March 12th, 2021, Ronald Butch DeFeo Jr. died at the Albany Medical Center. His official cause of death has never been released.
Interesting.
Yeah, I wonder why.
I don't know, but his official cause of death, I don't know if he committed suicide, they didn't release it. If he died of natural causes, I would think that they would release that. Don't know. March 12th, 2021 is the day that he died.
Now, when did the murders happen? What's the date?
The murders were November 13th, 1974.
And he passed in March.
And he passed in March of 2021.
I don't know. I'd have to look at that and postulate on it.
Yeah. So there are lots of moving parts. But I just want to say that the next time you watch one of the many Amityville movies, please remember the DeFeos, because you always see the movie about the Lutz family and right. What happens to them.
Right.
But it's the DeFeos that lost their lives. But their question remains, what was the real horror on Ocean Avenue in 1974? And that's all I have to say about that.
Hey, Hitch to Homicide listeners. This is psychic medium Catherine Kaufman. Since 1980, I've been investigating the paranormal and phenomena of spirits.
She's being modest. Catherine Kaufman is one of, if not the foremost authority in the South on the paranormal. She's done thousands of readings with amazing outcomes, including readings for me.
I'm a psychic medium, a paranormal blogger, and the host of a weekly live show, Monday Night Live in Lexington, where we discuss the paranormal as well as self-help and psychic defense.
And just so you know, all mediums are psychic, but not all psychics are mediums. Catherine is a rare gem who can read the energy around you and connect you to the loved ones who have passed. And on her weekly show, she delves into subjects such as dream interpretation, how to connect with your spirit guides, and unpacking the laws of attraction.
And now, I'm also hitting the road to connect with others on these subjects and more. I'm now taking booking engagements and can speak at your next group, company, or corporate event, offering tips on how to de-stress, how to love again after your partner has passed, and even how to develop your own psychic abilities, which all of us have. Because, yes, we all have them.
Don't miss this chance to connect with Catherine for your next event. To book any service, go to CatherineKaufman.com.
You can book and pay online.
And the best part for our H2H listeners, you don't have to be in Kentucky for Catherine to perform a psychic reading, mediumship, remote viewing, or business counseling, because online sessions are available.
Just go to CatherineKaufman.com. That's K-A-T-H-R-Y-N-K-A-U-F-F, as in Frank, M-A-N. And join me each Monday night on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for Monday Night Live in Lexington at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a live show about paranormal topics.
That's CatherineKaufman.com. Run, don't walk. You don't want to miss this.
Well, okay. Well, that wraps up that thing. But you said that that's all I have to say about that. Well, I have one more thing to say about this. You ready?
I'm ready.
This house is clean. I love it.
There you go. Just had to add that.
We might need Catherine to clean this house. I'm telling you, after this podcast, I'm not even lying. There is so much thunder and lightning going on outside right now. I'm like, what is happening as we're talking about this case?
It's so creepy.
When the psychic medium is creeped out, you got to worry a little bit, for goodness sake.
Well, let's get away from the creepy and let's do a little bless your heart.
Let's do it. Well, bless
your heart. Dateline, Orange Park, Florida. A 38-year-old guy named William James Walker in Orange Park, Florida, just outside of Jacksonville in the northeast part of the state, stole a trailer from a parking lot outside a Days Inn. That's not the worst part. Inside the trailer was about $12,000 worth of Leonard Skinner memorabilia.
Oh, man.
Wow. Woo!
Now you're going to get hurt doing
the
that.
The stuff was going to be sold at a cancer charity benefit in honor of Jimmy Van Zandt.
Oh.
The most valuable item in the trailer was a 1957 Les Paul guitar signed by several rock stars, plus a whole bunch of other Leonard Skinner stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
After tons of social media shares explaining that Walker was known to live transiently, frequently in different hotels in the Jacksonville area, and that he had praying hands tattooed on his forearm with a spider tattoo on his shoulder.
Praying hands.
He was found arrested by the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office on misdemeanor charges of trespassing and resisting police, according to Duval County jail logs.
Duval.
That's easy for you to say.
One of the comments on the police Facebook account, play Freebird 24/7 in his prison cell and be sure to tune it up.
Nice.
Turn it up.
Just give him three steps.
Turn it up. Just give him three steps. That's right, David.
Give him three steps.
That was a good one. Well, yes. If you have a bless your heart or you know somebody's heart who needs blessed,
yep,
send it off to me, Chris, at hitchtohomicide.com. I don't read them. I just forward them on to Rob. What can I say? That's all we have this week. Thank you again to the fabulous psychic medium, Catherine Kaufman.
Yay.
Be sure to go to her website. Be sure to go to our show notes. We're going to give you all kinds of information how you can get in touch with her. That's my husband, Rob.
And that's my beautiful bride.
And that's my very good friend, Catherine Kaufman, and her husband. That was great, David. Join us next time on Hitch to Homicide.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all. Bye.